This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about survival. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Thankfully, getting cancer as a child or teenager is rare, and in recent decades, survival rates have gone up significantly. After surgeries, radiation, and chemotherapy, many young patients have their whole lives ahead of them. But the illness can cast a long shadow. Reporter Nicole Leonard spoke to young survivors about the roller coaster of emotions they experience.
At 16 years old, Elodie Hakimian-Brogan thought she was about to hit her peak teenage era.
I was like, oh, this is when it's supposed to get fun.
It was the fall of 2019. She was playing on the high school varsity water polo team, making new friends, and reveling in the excitement of teen drama. But then, doctors discovered a tumor that had been slowly growing on one of her ovaries. She had some lingering stomach pain for years, but the tumor wasn't caught until it grew to the size of a grapefruit and weighed over 2.5 pounds.
It had its own blood system, and it ate one of my ovaries, and it was like, when they would do my CT scans, they like couldn't see my reproductive system at all. It was like so big.
Doctors told Elodie and her family that she'd need surgery to remove the tumor, which she named Kimberly.
I threw a party called F*** Kimberly, and it was like 3 days before my surgery, and it was like all my friends came over. We all wore pink. It was like bring your own ovaries, and it was great.
But soon, Elodie's bravado and swagger faded, and the reality of her situation set in. She started chemotherapy in early 2020. She was by far the youngest patient on the adult cancer ward at a hospital in Los Angeles, where she lives. She lost all of her hair, which sometimes fell out in clumps in the shower, a horrific experience. And she had nonstop nausea and vomiting for the 3 months of chemo infusions.
I had many breakdowns on the bathroom floor. It often was, I like needed this like hyper positivity to get through the day.
Then the COVID-19 pandemic hit, and Elodie became isolated from her friends. She also started feeling really lonely in her experience as a teenage cancer patient, sitting still for hours to get infusions, almost always surrounded by older men and women. It was nothing like in the books or movies she had seen.
Fault in Our Stars was one of my favorite movies growing up. And then I'm like sitting there and I'm like, where's my cancer boyfriend? And there was nothing of the sorts. There was no cancer boyfriend, no cancer girlfriend. There was literally just other cancer in the room.
She turned to social media to find empathy and understanding and feel less alone.
I had a TikTok called Hot Cancer Survivor. And I had like 60,000 followers.
What not to say to someone with cancer, part one. You're so strong. If you've said this before, it's okay. I said it before I got cancer. Just please avoid it in future conversations with sick people.
I had a blog called Sick Kid Chronicles. Like, I was producing all of this content about being sick because there was no one doing it.
Eventually, she finished treatment. Doctors were confident that they had vanquished all traces of Kimberly for good. And Elodie had this vision for what life would be like from then on.
I had this assumption that when I'm done with chemo in May, my birthday's in June, and then I'll work out all summer, I'll get ready for the season, and then I'll go back to school and I'll be ready for school. And it's like, none of those things happened because, oh my God, the life that I thought that I was going to walk back into, it's almost as if it did not exist anymore.
She felt like an imposter in her own body, now battle-worn and scarred. She felt like she could no longer really relate to the people who were once closest to her.
You go back into this world and everyone's like, oh my God, you're finally alive again. And people are so happy. And then you're like, I feel bad. Like, I don't know who I am. I don't know who you are. You seem different too. My parents felt different. I felt different. My dogs looked different. Like, everything was different, and then there's no one talks about it.
They didn't know what it felt like to prematurely lose the innocence of adolescence or contemplate death at such a young age. Elodie was also dealing with post-traumatic stress from cancer treatment, which was triggered by certain smells, foods, and memories.
On homecoming, this girl threw up in the back of my car at an In-N-Out drive-through, and I had a full-blown panic attack because it reminded me of chemo. Even when I smell hand sanitizer, I still am like, oh.
Nobody prepared her for just how difficult the survivorship part of cancer would be, especially in those early years. In some ways, Elodie says it felt harder than treatment itself. But those complicated feelings have changed with some distance. Elodie is now 22 and an art major at UCLA. She just hit the 5-year anniversary of completing cancer treatment, a big milestone in the survivorship world, as the risk of recurrence becomes very small.
I'm just going to continue living as if cancer will never come back, because that is what I prescribe to.
She found photography as a creative outlet for her feelings and to document some of her journey with cancer survivorship. Overall, Elodie says her identity has become less intertwined with cancer, and she feels good about it.
I like to not think about cancer now. It's this lovely privilege to not think about it.
She still draws from her experiences when it can inspire her art or when she can use it to help others. But now she feels like she has more control over her story.
There was a moment where I was like, it's everything. And then I was like, I don't even want to touch it. And then I have this like, it can be in my life and it doesn't have to be negative, which is a really nice stage that I'm at.
And it's a good place to be, says pediatric psychologist Lisa Schwartz. She works in the Childhood Cancer Survivorship Program at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia.
Your experience in some ways does have a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it's helpful for them to think of it that way. Like, you can control the narrative. Like, this is your epilogue phase. You can write your epilogue.
Lisa says young survivors sometimes fall into two extreme camps of how they process their past cancer treatment. They either want to forget it all and pretend it didn't happen, or they become consumed with what they went through and the potential consequences.
You want them to feel some level of vulnerability to be motivated to engage in follow-up care and health-promoting behaviors that can mitigate their risk of cancer and late effects in the future. But at the same time, there is something psychologically protective of feeling like that's in the past. I don't want to let that drag me down.
Most major cancer hospitals have survivorship programs and clinics to help patients figure out what long-term recovery might look like and how to deal with the psychological aftermath, including PTSD, social anxiety, depression, and other latent effects. But research shows that less than half of all childhood survivors are connected to these programs. Lisa says it's a missed opportunity to ensure that young people are getting the best follow-up care possible for living a long and healthy life.
For some of them, they literally just don't know. Like, oh, my cancer's over. I didn't know I needed this. For some of them, they have an idea that they're supposed to come back, but they're busy and they're not prioritizing it and they haven't sort of internalized the importance of it.
Lisa and her team are now working on interventions designed to re-engage young people in survivorship programs. These clinics can be a lifeline even years after finishing cancer treatment, says Ellie Crofton, who has what she calls a survivorship doctor at Penn Medicine in Philadelphia.
She just follows me now forever. She's stuck with me.
Ellie is sipping an iced coffee, sitting on a bench in a small park in Philadelphia. Kids on summer break are playing on the jungle gym. Other people are walking their dogs and riding their bikes through the park.
I've never seen it so busy.
Ellie is 37 now. She's a teacher. And when she was 25, her career plans were nearly derailed when she was diagnosed with a rare form of blood cancer.
At 25 years old, you kind of feel like a little invincible human, like nothing can touch you. So even when I was diagnosed, it didn't seem that real.
It was a shock. She moved back to Houston for a while to be closer to her parents and family during treatment. Even after chemotherapy and a successful bone marrow transplant, she was told that her immune system took a big hit and her life was going to look different moving forward.
I was told like I could never teach again. I needed to figure out what else to do with my life. Like, you know, after surviving, obviously. And so that was really hard.
That was about a decade ago, and Ellie was determined to prove everyone wrong. She did return to teaching and now works in Philly's public school system. But it wasn't easy. In those early years of survivorship, she says the pain and bitterness over what happened was still fresh. The physical reminders of cancer treatment lingered as her hair slowly grew back and her energy levels made a sluggish recovery.
It takes quite a long time to kind of feel like a normally, quote unquote, normally functioning human again.
And then, with time, she started to figure out what role cancer played in her past and what role it will continue to play in her life now.
It's not something that, like, is me. It's something that happened, and it's something that will always be a part of me, but it's not, like, my identity.
She still has questions, like will she ever have to deal with graft versus host disease, which is a complication for some people after bone marrow transplants? Or did cancer treatment affect her ability to one day have children? Or will there be other health issues? Recently, she developed high blood pressure.
I went to my GP and they're like, well, you're fit, you're healthy, you're young, like we don't really understand why. And then I went to my survivorship doctor and she was like, oh, yeah, that's just kind of like a long-term effect.
She handles these situations with a sense of calmness and maturity, as cancer survivorship has become a quieter, more comfortable place to be in. In her spare time, she does advocacy work for the National Marrow Donor Program. She recently met an older woman who had cancer and a transplant decades ago, when the procedures were still considered experimental. And now that woman is just thriving. Ellie says that gives her hope for her own future.
Knowing that, like, I am going to be old at some point, you know, that's always been in the back of my mind. Like, how long am I going to be here for? Is this cutting things short for me? There's lots and lots of things that go on in my head about what this could have changed for my future. But seeing her and seeing a few other people that I know, it's just kind of like, no, don't even, just keep living life.
That story was reported by Nicole Leonard.